What have you done now?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Brad Gilmore Show on Demand. We have a fun show for you today, as we always do. It's nice to be back here on a weekly basis. That's right, the Brad Gilmore Show is back. It's back, baby. Every fake Monday morning for our long-term listeners, you know what that means. But every Monday morning, I'm going to be back with a new show, whether it's going to be a celebrity interview, whether it's going to be a diatribe on something that I thought about over the week, or whether it's going to be a breakdown of something that I love, be it movies, sports, or whatever else I like. I don't know, but the boat is going to be here every single Monday. Isn't that right, Leah Thompson?
Oh, my God. You're my dream boat, for sure.
Yes, that is right, and that is Leah Thompson calling me a dream boat. For anybody who hasn't checked it out already, go check out my book, Back from the Future, a celebration of the greatest time travel story ever told, or go check out the Back to the Future, the podcast, available on your podcast app, your favorite podcast app. It's going to be there. Today on the show, I have a delightful interview with a delightful human being. I talked to the legendary, and everyone I talk to, I believe, is legendary, but this man really is legendary. I talked to the legendary Jim Belushi. Jim and I talk about his brand new show on the Discovery Channel, Wednesdays at 10, called Growing Belushi. Yeah, the name says it all. Jim Belushi is now a marijuana cannabis farmer in Oregon, and he is doing a lot of things to help destigmatize marijuana, to help prisoners get out of prison who are serving nonviolent marijuana-related crimes in states where now it is legal for even recreational use. He's trying to help the people, and he can't help but love that. So I talked to Jim Belushi about this. We talked over Zoom last week. Now, here was the cool thing. I had him for, I think the publicist told me, 30 minutes. And I was planning it out. I'm like, you know what? I don't know if I'll keep him for 30. I mean, if we're going to touch just on the show, I'll keep him for about 20, 25. And that's what the interview ended up going. But before the interview ever started rolling, Jim and I talked for at least 10 minutes about sports, the dedication of athletes, all kinds of really fun and cool topics that didn't make air. Like, there's a video of the interview out here if you want to see it. It's on Reality Wrestling's YouTube channel. It's also on the Schmodown Entertainment Network on YouTube as well. So you can check out videos of most of these interviews, if not all of them, on those channels. But this one, I didn't air that part of the interview because we were kind of off air and just chatting. But I think here on the podcast, it would be more than okay to talk about it because we discussed something that was really interesting about rooting for athletes. Because he's a big Chicago sports fan. I'm, of course, a massive Houston, Texas, everything fan. And before we started, I said, hey, man, I hope you don't mind. I'm an Astros fan. I know you're a Cubs guy, so I just wanted to throw that out there. And we start talking about it, and I just wanted to share that. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to play the interview proper, and then right at the end, I'm going to play that special 10 minutes of audio with Jim Belushi that no one has heard before, and now you will be the first. Check this out here on the Brad Gilmore Show on Demand, my interview with Jim Belushi.
Oh, Brad, what have you done now?
Oh, my God, you're my dream boat, for sure.
And he joins me right now, the legendary Jim Belushi for the new series Growing Belushi on the Discovery Channel Wednesdays at 10. Jim, welcome to the show. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, well, thank you. It's good to be here. It's nice to be talking with you, Brad.
Yeah, no, man, you know, what's crazy, I heard about this show, and maybe 10 years ago, a show like this wouldn't have existed, right? I don't think America would be ready for it.
Let's talk about maybe a year ago.
Yeah, even that, a year ago.
It took me a long time to sell this show. And first of all, Live Nation, you know, Michael Rapino, who runs Live Nation, I went to him, and in 8 minutes, he said, how much money do you need? This is a great idea for a show. Let's go sell it. It was a hard sell because it's about cannabis. And they worried about advertisers, and Discovery took the risk. So between Michael Rapino and Discovery, I'm just blessed that there's men out there and women out there that are taking a risk. And it's not a stoner show. It's about growing cannabis, growing as a person. It's got music. It's got great humor and a great relationship. It turned out really well. We did very well last week, so I'm very excited about this coming week.
Yeah, I know. We're going to keep it going. We're definitely going to keep the viewership up there. But to me, like I said, I wouldn't have imagined this would have been a show, like you said, even a year ago. But now we've gotten to a place in this country where the conversation has happened to where we're way more accepting. I mean, I'm from the great state of Texas where, you know, it's still illegal in Texas, but now CBD shops are popping up on every corner. The medicinal aspect is being more appreciated and approved in almost every state. So I think we're now finally getting to a place to where we're looking past the Cheech and Chong stereotype of cannabis and marijuana, and we're actually talking about the real benefits, either medicinally or spiritually, that it brings.
Well, you're preaching to the choir here, man. I mean, that's what the show is about. It's about educating people. Look, at whether you're red or blue, or it doesn't matter where you are, we all have one thing in common. We all have medicine in common. We have anxiety in common. We have sleeplessness in common. And a lot of people are coming onto it because they have relatives who have been through chemotherapy or Alzheimer's or severe pain or seizures or PTSD, and they're seeing that it's working for them. And so it's really changing the climate. I mean, you know, I'm sitting at dinner with my mother-in-law, who's 80, with her 84-year-old boyfriend. And, you know, she has two couples there. They're, you know, 80s, 79, one woman, and me. My wife was out of town, and she thought I'd be lonely. No, but okay. Anyway, they're very conservative people, nice people. You know, I was a little nervous. And when the subject came up that I was growing cannabis in Oregon, they just leaned into me like, you know, my shoulder hurts, my hand hurts, I can't golf anymore. I don't sleep very well. Do you think does it calm you down? And the one woman, she goes, does that make you feel good? I want some of the stuff that makes you feel good, right? So I do not run into naysayers, only curiosity. And that's why this show is great, is because I'm growing cannabis and I don't know what I'm doing. And as I learn, so does the audience. And what they learn is that this is agriculture. This is a medicine. It's grown with safety, care, love, and it is tested and pesticide free. And I talk about dosage. And, you know, to start with like a candy bar, 2.5 milligrams to go to sleep. I'm not a stoner. I'm not a guy who gets blasted. I take a little chocolate to go to sleep, and I take one hit off this little teeny joint called cherry pie. I call it the marriage counselor because it's low THC. High in terpene values, which create a great entourage effect. And it just makes me so nice and charming. And when she chats, you know, 2,000 miles a minute, I watch her now and go, oh my God, isn't she cute? Opposed to, I'm going to the bathroom and not coming out for 2 hours. I called the marriage counselor and I sold out of it in Oregon because I told that story, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, but again, it's like you said, it's knowing the benefits to it, whether it be medicinal or otherwise. I know in Oregon, it's completely recreational. You can go into a multitude of stores and buy it in whatever form. But even the states where it's not, those medicinal purposes, I remember reading Governor Jesse Ventura's book. He had a book that he put out called The Marijuana Manifesto, and he talked about how his wife was suffering from these epileptic seizures.
Oh, it knocks it right out.
Yeah, he was saying she was having 3 or 4 a day, and the medicine that her doctors gave her, not working, 3 drops of cannabis oil under the tongue 3 times a day, she hasn't had a seizure since.
Let me tell you about Heather, okay, this woman in Colorado Springs. Her son was having 40 seizures a day. All right, this woman she never slept in her husband's room. And because she was always there, 17 different protocols they tried. He was going into hospice, and she finally did the CBD, and it stopped. He had like one seizure in 6 months. I mean, it's there's, I hear story, 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 story about this stuff. And she is like this beautiful woman who is now making it available for other families that suffer, because the number one fear in life is death, but the number two fear in life is the collapse of family. And families collapse because of a death in the family, like mine. Extreme illness, like Heather's son, that she said, our marriage was over until that CBD came in. Losing a job, a divorce is traumatic. You know, Brad, I think everybody is screaming inside. And we all find a way to medicate it. The most easiest medication, of course, is alcohol. But it's depressant, it makes you hungover. Alcohol can go into alcoholism, again, collapse families, you know, kill people on the highways. Then there's pills, there's opiates. Well, we know what that does. There's Xanax and Ambien. Why not choose a medicine that's gentle, nonviolent, and it's healing? It makes you feel good. I mean, if you microdose like me, it makes you feel good. You get along with the family. You can heal the family. That family, Heather's family, was healed. It didn't collapse. So I believe, and this show is the education of where this can go and help collapse families, not collapse, and help recover from the screaming, the PTSD that comes from being from a collapsed family. I'm sorry, now you got me preaching it.
No, you know what though? And that brings me to a good point, because when you talk about the collapsed family, it's not only just when you lose a loved one or there's a severe illness, it's also when someone gets incarcerated, right? When someone goes away, when dad's taken out of the home or mom's taken out of the home and they're locked up for a marijuana-related crime, which happens all over this country, and now several states have it to where it's legalized, yet these prisoners are still in prison for these sentences of a crime that wouldn't be a crime now.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm part of the Last Prisoners Project with Steve D'Angelo out of Oakland. There are 40,000 people incarcerated just in the United States for cannabis crimes. And we've been working very hard trying to get Michael Thompson, who was sentenced to 40 to 60 years for 3 pounds of cannabis. He's been in prison for 24 years. Yes. That collapsed his family. And now, at 65, he just got COVID, and he's in the hospital, the prison hospital in Michigan. And we've been fighting, and the state's attorney just this week, like yesterday, is aware of it and working on it and sending a letter to the governor trying to get Michael Thompson out. But there's thousands of people in there for a nonviolent crime that we are out here profiting, selling, enjoying, and they got nailed for it. So yes, there's some that incarceration is definitely a trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I just appreciate the work that you're doing trying to get these guys and girls out for these crimes. But you know, it's one thing to say I'm going to do this show about, you know, growing Belushi. I'm going to do it about the Belushi farm, working on growing this cannabis. But it's another thing to actually do the show and figure out how you're going to make a full season out of it. I experienced this earlier this year. I published my first book. It was about Back to the Future, the movie Back to the Future. And, you know, I sold it to the publisher, and then they were like, I sold the idea. And then they said, okay, go write it. And now I'm thinking, how the hell am I going to write a whole book about this? So, you know what I mean? So for you, when you pitched it, and you sold the idea to Discovery, was it like, wait a minute, okay, how am I going to space this out into a full series of shows?
You know what? I had the opposite problem. I've been filming stuff on my farm for 3 years. I went down to Columbia with my cousin and my friend James Orr, and we picked up a camera crew, and we went hunting for seeds for 9 days, improvising the whole time. I got 29 hours of Columbia alone. The truth of the matter is, it's 3 one-hour episodes right now. I could have made 8. To edit it down was just so difficult, because there is so much involved with what's going on. And like I said earlier, it's not a stoner show. This is a real, that's why Discovery liked it. It's a real, there's real processing in it where you understand everything. And the added bonus of humor. music. Danny Aykroyd's in it. We do the Blues Brothers. Going to Colombia is exotic. Harvest party with my family. It's just, I know, I honestly, God, I think we could have done 8. So if, when they pick this up, we'll do a full season. I know I'm doing an opiate trade program in Portland. I'm going to go to Canada. I'm going to go to Israel to do more about the CBDN, CBDG, breaking it down into medicine. I'm going to go down to Jamaica, South Africa. I want to go back to Colombia, and we'll also be in the farm expanding our. I mean, I got tons of stories.
I can see that. I can see that. So hopefully we get to see more of them. Again, Growing Belushi Wednesdays at 10 on Discovery. But, you know, you're still in this entertainment sphere. What you're doing it kind of a little bit different now, talking about the cannabis aspect of things. But for me, my oldest brother, he's in Chico, California. He became a doctor. He's a psychiatrist. And to me, when your oldest brother sets the bar that high, you know, mom and dad are looking at you like, you know, you better do something, right? We're not going to accept anything less. So I felt that pressure. So I went a different way. I said, I'm not going to follow in my brother's footsteps. I'm going to go try something else. So I don't have that comparison. You did. You went Second City, Saturday Night Live, same like your brother John did. Did you ever feel that pressure? Because your brother was such a huge presence in everyone's lives. Would that, I would think that would make it permanent.
I understand that question, and no doubt there is certain pressure, but it always came from the outside, not from the inside. You know, I come from a family, my father was an immigrant who, you know, came here and was a dishwasher, a valet parker, and he worked his way up in a restaurant to eventually owning his own restaurant, the Cheeseburger restaurant in Saturday Night Live, actually, the Olympia Lunch. And then to steakhouses, you know, and John and I started working for him. And so you have a model in your home of what is possible. So the possibility of running a restaurant was mine. Thank God my dad lost the restaurant. John went into acting, and now I said, okay, there's someone else in the family that's finding a possibility. And they are blazing a road for you to follow. So I looked at it that way. Like, hey, man, I mean, when I started singing with the Blues Brothers, Danny forced me to do it. I didn't want to do it. I thought it was too weird. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's like a law firm. When one of the partners goes down, the brother takes over. And I go, you're not weird about it? He goes, absolutely not. You'll make a fine Brother Z. Not Brother Jake, Brother Z, Z. Zero Shite of Blues. Well, I got on stage and started singing, and that crowd went crazy. And I just looked up and I went, thank you, John. Like blazing this music thing, because this is one of the most joyous things I've ever done in my life. So he opened up possibilities. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, you know what? That's a really good way to look at it, because he did, and you were able to also, though, not only follow in his footsteps in certain aspects, whether it be SNL or what have you, but you went and did your own sitcoms. You have this show. You're so successful in so many different ways. I want to ask you this. So in my career in the sports world, you get to meet a lot of cool people. I get to talk to Jim Belushi. I get to talk to all these people. But I had one moment earlier this year where I was like, oh, wow, I'm actually in this. It was in Las Vegas. There was a big heavyweight championship fight. And I found myself face-to-face, nose-to-nose with Mike Tyson. And we had a full conversation. He was so warm and welcoming. It wasn't on the air or anything. We were just having a private chat. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm really in this now. What for you was that moment when you were out there in L.A. and Hollywood, even if you've been in for a few years, where you're either on a set or on a show or in front of a crowd, and you're like, oh, wow, I'm actually here now?
I mean, there are moments that come along like that, about last night when that was successful. But I did a TV series in Hollywood, I think with Gary Marshall in 79. I thought, oh my God, I'm on the Paramount lot. I am shooting something. I'm in it. I'm here. This is not like some small little theater. And it wasn't even Saturday Night Live. I hadn't been Saturday Night Live yet. It was like they picked me up at the airport in a station wagon. Never been to Los Angeles. I never flew first class. They pulled into Paramount. I walked in. I auditioned. I had it. I stayed at the Sunset Marquee. They gave me a bunch of cash, and I started working the next day. It was like, oh my God, I'm here. Ma! Ma, I'm calling you from the Sunset Marquee.
Yeah, it's always cool to know when those moments are. And then, like you said, you did Saturday Night Live, which as a fan, I love the show Saturday Night Live, but it seems like as a performer, you want to talk about just a pressure cooker of all sorts of emotions, and the payoff could be massive, but the pressure just seems unbelievable.
Well, I got to tell you, Brendan, Saturday Night Live was the toughest thing I've ever done. I consider it the mass unit of comedy. I mean, like getting thrown into Vietnam and being a doctor, you're thrown on Saturday Night Live and having to survive. I consider the hardest thing I've ever done, including two divorces, okay? Those are hard, but they weren't Saturday Night Live.
I can only imagine.
I mean, you know, to me, we were talking earlier about it. I believe everybody is screaming inside. You know, I saw this homeless Asian woman on the streets of Portland at night when I was smoking a cigar. And she walked with a little bag and poor thing. And all of a sudden, she started screaming like someone was knifing her. And I thought, God, if I can just get her an edible, maybe the screaming would stop. And I started thinking, I got a whole thing about that, but I started thinking personally, like, God, we're all screaming from something. And she's lost her management. So how do we manage our screaming? You know, like I said, the alcohol, the pills. So on Saturday Night Live, when you're in a high-pressure situation, to manage your screaming is very difficult. And I got to say, Dick Ebersol really helped me a lot.
Yeah, the great NBC's Dick Ebersol. You know, that guy's a visionary. I don't think Dick Ebersol gets enough credit for when he had to take over from Lorne. And he came in and he did it like the Golden State Warriors. Huh?
He saved the show.
He did. He did. And what I was going to say, he came in like the Golden State Warriors and it was like, hey, who's a free agent out there I can grab right now? Kevin Durant, come on. Steph Curry, play. Let's make a deal.
Billy Crystal, Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer, Marty Short kept me on it. Kept Eddie on it. He put together a team and brought that show back. And then handed it over to Lauren.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Lauren does a great job. I mean, you know.
Yeah, he's Lauren Michaels. he's a legend.
Lauren Michaels is a visionary. And what I mean, you know, he was smart enough to cast my brother John, so that's all I can say.
There you go. You know, you talk about these great shows. Saturday Night Live was one, but I think that you were a part of the last great wave of sitcoms. According to Jim, 8 Simple Rules, like around that time, 01, 02, around that time, was the last great wave. And now they don't seem to connect like they used to. Now it's more single camera comedies, stuff like The Office, things of that nature, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Those traditional sitcoms, they don't seem to click. What do you think it was about your wave that was so successful?
Well, remember, you know, there was 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My show came out on October 5th, you know, a month after 9/11. And it was a family show. It was a nice show. 8 Simple Rules, a nice show. Family, normality. So that time was, it was just a timing thing. We were a hit show because that's what people wanted after that terror. But then I don't know what's going on with it. I mean, you know, there's no good sitcom until there is one. And then all of a sudden, like, wow, they're hard to find. It's chemistry. I got really lucky with Courtney Thorne Smith and Larry Joe Campbell and Kimberly Williams. I mean, we just got lucky with the chemistry. People in sitcoms and TV, I think in performing, I mean, in general. You know what, John told me this. He left Saturday Night Live after 4 years. And I said, John, what are you doing? It's the hottest thing, you know. Hey, Jimmy, it's like high school, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year, you got to go. And, you know, I was like, God, you know, I'm a Second City actor. And I go, God, I want to do that. And he goes, why would anybody want to do it after us? He goes, we capture the hearts of America. No one will be able to do that. And the sitcoms now, if you capture the hearts of people, they'll follow you wherever you go. It's like The Odd Couple. You didn't care what they said. You just liked the chemistry and the joy. They made you feel good. And Courtney and I and Larry and Kimberly made people feel good. I'm in the feel-good business. I mean, I perform, I entertain, I make people laugh. Now I'm in cannabis, and I'm trying to perform and entertain people and heal people with stuff that makes you feel good.
You know what? I think that that's a really great way to say it. And to transition finally to Growing Belushi, what's the one thing that you hope people, either if they watch the show, they hear this interview, or they are around you in any way, what's the one thing you want them to take away from either it's cannabis or the stereotypes of marijuana or the benefits? What's the one lesson or one piece of information you hope people take away from it?
Safety. That it's safe. That it's safe. Nobody's going to OD. I mean, unless, you know, you cross it. If you drink with it or you take pills with it, but if you take pills with alcohol, you know, same kind of thing. I mean, as a pure medicine, it's safe. And I show that it's safe. And it's clean. The legal cannabis is very well regulated and clean. And like I said earlier, there's a woman I know, very conservative woman, my bookkeeper. Her mother, you know, has got a little Alzheimer's, and she gets aggravated, and she gives her, I got her some little gummies, little chocolates. She thinks it's a little chocolate, and it soothes her. And she doesn't even know what it is. And she's like, where's that little candy you got? That was so good. And it just heals people, and it's safe to give your 82-year-old mother who's losing, getting dementia and getting aggravated. You know, I just wanted that it's safe.
You know what? I think that's a great lesson. I think that's a great also place to leave this. Jim Belushi, the show is called Growing Belushi, Wednesdays on Discovery, 10 p.m. Set your DVRs, however you got to see the show. I'm sure it's streaming somewhere as well. Make sure that people go out and see it. Jim, I really appreciate this conversation.
What a joy you are to talk to, man. You know, good luck with the book, man.
I'd love to find a way to get you one. I would love to get you. Back to the Future was a huge movie in the 80s. I'd love to get you a copy.
Of the book?
Of the book, yes.
You finished it.
It's done. I have it around here somewhere. I have it finished. It came out. It went to number one on Amazon. I was really happy with it. So thank you.
Yeah, man. Congratulations.
I'd love to send you one, though.
I wrote a book. It was almost as hard as Saturday Night Live.
You know what? The thing that got me about it is everything that I've done is talking to another person, or it's a collaborative effort. I'm working with somebody on a show. I'm working on this. I'm working on that. And then a book is an independent venture where you're sitting there in front of a keyboard trying to produce entertainment for people without being audible and without working. It was so hard.
It was the hardest thing, man. There's a poem Dylan Thomas wrote about him as a writer. It's called In My Craft or Sullen Art. Exercised in the still night when only the moon rages, and the lovers lie abed with all their griefs in their arms. I labor by the singing light, not for the strut and the charms on the ivory stages, but for the lovers who pay no heed or wages for my craft or sullen art. I mean, the loneliness of a writer is so difficult, man. So you have all my empathy. I know what you went through.
Well, I appreciate that. And what a great poem, and what a great way to end it, talking to the great Jim Belushi. Again, Growing Belushi, Wednesdays at 10 on Discovery. So that was my interview proper with Jim Belushi, which I got to say was one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. He was such a genuine human being to speak to, and I can't say enough nice things about him on and off the air. He was just really a treat. And here's the thing. I'm
not a marijuana user, cannabis user, CBD user, never have, never expect to be, but I don't have any judgment of the people who are, and I think that he's doing something that is very good for people, both medically, spiritually, and otherwise. And to me, if you're in prison right now for something that is now legal outside of those prison walls, I don't think that you should be remaining inside those prison walls. Do you know what I'm saying? Especially when it's for a nonviolent crime. Now, if it was a violent crime, that's a whole different thing. But go check out Jim's work with the Last Prisoners Project and check out Growing Belushi. Again, I've watched the show. It's a really fun show. It's funny and informative. Just everything that you want from a Discovery Channel original. So definitely go check that out. But here we go. This is my special off-the-record interview with Jim Belushi, where we talk about sports and our appreciation for athletes. Check this out. This is exclusive right here on the podcast feed. I hope you like it.
You're good.
We're good to go.
Getting better at this Zoom thing.
I think that we all have to work on this skill. It seems like we're going to be doing it for a little bit while longer.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Actually, for me, it's quite lovely because when I do these press junkets for, you know, opening and launching stuff, I'm flying to Chicago and Dallas and New York and I'm like moving in and out of cars, up elevators, signing, you know. This is like, I'm going to have a little breakfast and then I'm going to talk to a national outlet.
Yeah, you know, we've had to get used to it, but I'm like you, you know, not having to make that commute into the station and wait for people to get there. And then there's traffic, there's delays, there's this, there's that, there's the other. I can just come to my little room, set up, and talk to Jim Belushi.
Here we go.
You know what? We might as well start right now. We'll just roll right into it. He joins me right now. Before, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Before you roll, you know, I'm a Cubs fan in Chicago. I'm not a big statistics guy, so don't bust my balls, okay?
It's okay. I'm not going to hit you with any stats or anything.
Yeah.
I'm an Astros fan, so I don't know if we can be friends or not, but I think we'll be all right.
Hey, you know what it really comes down to? I love watching great athletes. I don't care what team they're on. I mean, they work so damn hard all their lives, going through that college ball, the competition, the injuries. I love seeing men have success in their craft. Now, the last seven games of a World Series, I don't love them so much. But I do enjoy the challenge, man. I'll tell you that Boston Bruins, Chicago Blackhawks Stanley Cup Series was one of the most beautiful. I mean, talk about athletes at the top of their game, everyone on both teams. I mean, it was just down to that last minute, 17 seconds. Otherwise, that's exciting, man.
Well, I tend to like watching those hockey series more because home court really doesn't come into play as much. You can be down 3-1 or 3-0 and still come back and win four games in a row. It's a real fun sport to watch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was beautiful. And in Boston, particularly during that series, it was such a tight series. And it was funny because I got a ticket from the Blackhawks to sit in, you know, Boston in the stadium there. And, they're all Boston fans around me. I got my Blackhawks. I mean, the cheering, the teasing, it was lovely. They were fun. They weren't, nobody was mean or saying anything mean. And at the end of the game, when we surprisingly won, they all stood up, shook my hand, said, "Great series. Congratulations."
Can't beat that. Like,
because we're all in it for the study, the craft, the art of beauty. You know, I mean, these men and women in sports, but they just – so, yeah, I can talk to you if you're an Astros fan.
Okay, good. It's funny. I just had that conversation yesterday to where I've gotten to the point in my life finally where even if I'm watching it, you know, my team play, and the other team makes a great play or a good series or a great game, great pitch, great shot, I appreciate it now. I said, yeah. That was a great play. That was great.
But you know where the training came? The training came with Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you could be from Boston, you could be anywhere, but when you watch Michael Jordan play, he transcended team and took athleticism into a place where, how are you going to hate Jordan?
You can't. You have to appreciate greatness. That's what I say. You got to appreciate greatness when you see it. I was in, before the pandemic hit, I was in the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas, Rockets versus the Lakers. And when they're doing the opening announcements and LeBron James walks out, LeBron James got the biggest crowd reaction, bigger than the entire home team. Because, like, that's LeBron. We gotta give love to him.
Of course.
Right.
It's beauty. And, you know, the way players move from teams to teams nowadays, from football teams and baseball, I mean, it's – you know, it's really about watching great athleticism.
Yeah. Yeah, they move so much, and it's like the old Jerry Seinfeld bit where he's like, you're just cheering for the laundry. You're just cheering for the clothes. You know?
Well, I do have to say that Cubs laundry, you know, I was changing those diapers.
Right.
You know, it does, blue runs off on you, you know.
Right,
and
right.
Now I can at least participate in conversations because we have a World Series.
Right, you know? I hear you. I hear. Well, see, again, Astros fan, the White Sox, they swept us in our first time we were up there, and then finally we have one, but it has an asterisk next to it. But that's neither here nor there.
Nah, asterisk is just a pretty little thing, man.
Yeah. It's like an accoutrement.
Yeah, but, it's like an umlaut.
There you go. No one knows what it is, but it looks nice.
Yeah, umlaut's cool, right?
Okay, we'll get rolling here in 3, 2.